Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
It's 7 a.m. in Tokyo, 10 p.m. in London, and 6 p.m. here in New York. I'm Julia Chatterley, and wherever you are in the world, this is your First Move. Welcome once again to First Move, and here's your need to know. Is the clock ticking on TikTok? The US House passing a bill that forces TikTok's Chinese owners to sell the app or face a ban in the United States, but that's a long way off. We'll explain. Ukrainian drones strike Russian oil refineries in one of the largest attacks since the war began. Investigators say Boeing is unable to provide crucial records tied to January's door plug blowout on an Alaska Airlines flight. And an Oscar ovation. The CEO of IMAX joins to discuss Oppenheimer praise, Dune Part 2 success, and Asian expansion. That conversation and plenty more coming up. But first, the biggest fight in Washington today, not between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. It's actually between lawmakers who want to force a sale of TikTok in the United States and others who just want to leave the social media platform alone. For perspective, around 170 million Americans currently use TikTok, and contained within that, of course, a lot of votes. Now, President Biden saying just last week he'd support a bill that could ban the app if its Chinese parent, ByteDance, doesn't sell it. Meanwhile, former President Donald Trump, who picked the fight first, just to be clear, now making a big U-turn, criticizing any potential ban. Now, despite Trump's opposition, House Republicans passed the bill by a wide margin on a rare bipartisan vote. But it's going to get much more complicated in the Senate, as Lauren Fox reports.
After major bipartisan support in the House for a bill that could potentially ban TikTok, its next stop in the U.S. Senate and the fate of its tens of millions of users in the U.S. is not as clear-cut.
This is one of those arguments you could push either argument.
The House overwhelmingly passed their plan that would require Chinese parent company ByteDance to sell its popular social media platform or face a ban in the U.S.
At the end of the day, for me, it really came down to whether or not we can take some action to try to deter this malign influence of the PRC.
But the bill wasn't without its detractors. 65 members voted against it, including 50 Democrats.
I think there are serious national security concerns, but I think the way the bill was crafted was problematic, and so I voted no.
The answer is not to go selectively banning the flow of information from a particular nation.
Those backing it argue they did so for national security.
I want to protect them from a foreign adversary collecting their data and manipulating it.
TikTok is owned by ByteDance. ByteDance is in China.
Already, President Joe Biden has said he would sign the bill if it passes. That, opponents argue, could be a political mistake.
Do you worry at all about the political implications for Biden, for Democrats in the election, over supporting this legislation?
I don't know why you want to upset young people and 170 million people on a platform.
Republican frontrunner Donald Trump is taking a different approach. After the former president once called for an outright ban on TikTok,
we'll either close up TikTok in this country for security reasons, or it'll be sold.
He now says he isn't behind the House bill. The bill's future in the Senate also less certain.
There are a lot of questions my colleagues are asking, myself included. I haven't come to a final decision as to whether or not it should be banned.
Senators Marco Rubio and Mark Warner, top members of the Senate Intelligence Committee, committed Wednesday to, quote, working together to get this bill passed through the Senate and signed into law. But Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has not committed to putting the bill on the floor.
I'll have to consult and intend to consult with my relevant committee chairman to see what their views would be.
Now, the Chinese government not changing their view on this, calling it an act of bullying. Mark Stewart has the details from Beijing.
This discussion and debate surrounding TikTok comes at a time when the United States and China are trying to find a roadmap for the future when it comes to these business and economic issues. Yet there is skepticism. It's a point I brought up in a question to a spokesperson from China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Let's take a listen.
As you well know, lawmakers in the United States are voting to possibly ban TikTok. Regardless of what they may decide, what is your response to feelings of distrust from American lawmakers and the American public toward Chinese companies?
Even though the U.S. has not found evidence on how TikTok endangers its national security, it has never stopped going after TikTok. Such practice of resorting to acts of bullying, when one could not succeed in fair competition, disrupts the normal operation of the market. It undermines the confidence of international investors and sabotages the global economic and trade order. This will eventually backfire on the U.S. itself.
I also asked if China was advising TikTok on how to proceed. The response, very much what you just heard, no further insight was given. Mark Stewart, CNN, Beijing.
And we'll have much more on this later in the show when we'll be joined by Republican Congressman Corey Mills, who was a co-sponsor of that bill. For now, let's move to Russia's war with Ukraine. And Ukraine is on the offensive. A defense source says Ukraine has launched one of its largest drone attacks since the war began, hitting multiple oil refineries. This comes as Russian President Vladimir Putin threatens once again to use nuclear weapons if necessary. His pledge was made during an interview with Russian state media. He also boasted that Russia has the most modern nuclear weapons of any nation. Vladimir Putin also warned Western adversaries against further aggression towards Russia. And as Fred Pleitgen explains, President Putin says his country is in a strong position on the battlefield.
Moscow's troops claiming they're on the offensive, releasing this video purporting to show Russian cluster munitions destroying three Ukrainian combat choppers, even though CNN cannot independently verify the authenticity of the video. Russian President Vladimir Putin, in an interview with Kremlin-controlled media, directly warning the U.S. don't send troops to help Ukraine, even though the Biden administration has never even come close to saying they do that. We know what American combat troops on Russian territory are. They are interventionists, he said. That is how we will treat it, even if they appear on Ukrainian territory. And Putin even taking his threats nuclear, saying Russia would have the edge over the U.S. in a war using atomic weapons on land, in the air using strategic bombers, and at sea with Moscow's powerful fleet of nuclear-armed subs. From a technical point of view, of course, we're ready for nuclear war, he said. The missiles are constantly combat ready. Secondly, and this is accepted by everybody, our nuclear triad is more modern than any other triad. Actually, only us and the Americans have a triad. Struggling on the battlefield, Ukraine says it has hit Russian oil refineries, including this one just over 100 miles outside Moscow, with long-distance drones. Putin calling this attempted interference in the upcoming Russian presidential election. He's set to win by a landslide. The main goal is to, if not disrupt the presidential elections in Russia, he said, then at least to somehow interfere in the normal process of expressing the will of citizens. Ahead of that vote, and after the death and burial of opposition leader Alexei Navalny, Navalny's supporters say the Kremlin's crackdown is escalating. The former head of Navalny's anti-corruption foundation, Leonid Volkov, assaulted and beaten with a hammer outside his home in Lithuania. While the Kremlin hasn't commented so far, Volkov blaming Putin for the attack.
It was another obvious, typical, classic gangster hello from Putin, from the St. Petersburg gangster. Vladimir Vladimirovich, hello to you too. What else can I say? Continue working against Putin. That's what needs to be done. Let's go on. And Lithuania's intelligence services believe the attack on Volkov was likely, quote, Russian organized. All this as the war in Ukraine continues and civilians bear the brunt of Moscow's full-on invasion. Several killed and dozens wounded by Russian drone and missile attacks in the past days. For Pletkin, CNN, Berlin.
Okay, straight ahead here on First Move, your up-to-the-minute weather forecast. Plus, Adidas's China outlook is truly CrossFit. The sportswear firm's strategy working out again in Asia, but not everything is so easy peasy. I'll explain. And the theatre chain that makes moviegoers swoon when they see Dune. IMAX CEO Richard Gelfond looks ahead to the summer blockbuster season globally. Stay with us.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm a health reporter and have been for 15 years. And even I feel overwhelmed by some of the things I read about the stuff we're eating.
My colleague Meg Terrell wanted to take a deep dive into something you've probably heard a lot about recently. Ultra-processed foods. There is a lot to learn there, some fascinating stuff, and some of it is probably going to change the way you shop. Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to First Move, and to all our viewers in the US and Latin America, we hope you're having a wonderful Wednesday evening and a good Thursday morning if you're waking up with us across Asia. In today's Money Move, a wobbly Wednesday for US stocks. The S&P 500 falling from record highs as tech stocks sagged. But the Dow managed to chalk up gains, as you can see, little gains there, 0.1%. Meanwhile, trans-Pacific trade tensions hurting shares of U.S. steel. Shares tumbling more than 12% on word that U.S. President Joe Biden has concerns about its planned sale to Japan's Nippon Steel. The nearly $15 billion deal was announced late last year. I think you can expect to hear plenty more about this ahead of Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida's state visit to the United States. That's coming next month. And that leads me to a mostly lower day across Asia Wednesday, the Japanese Nikkei falling for a third straight session. Chinese stocks also pulling back. We'll see what the day brings this Thursday there. Now, U.S. investigators say they are frustrated by the lack of information from aerospace giant Boeing as they probe one of the company's recent mid-air safety mishaps. Officials investigating the shocking incident back in January when a door plug blew out of an Alaska Airlines 737 MAX jet say Boeing has been unable to hand over key information. All this as New Zealand officials recover the black boxes from the Boeing 787 that plunged midair on Monday, hurting dozens of passengers. Pete Montine joins us now. Pete, it's tough to keep up, but let's talk about the first story first. Boeing say, I believe, that the work that was done on that door plug situation was not documented and the security tapes have been deleted.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, the woman leading this probe is putting Boeing on blast once again. Jennifer Homendy is the head of the National Transportation Safety Board, and she says Boeing's lack of a paper trail is now hampering this investigation. Remember, the NTSB's preliminary report of the January 5th incident said this: Boeing did not reinstall the four critical door plug bolts before this 737 MAX 9 was delivered to Alaska Airlines. The bolts were removed at the Boeing factory in Renton, Washington for corrective work on another part of the plane, but now the NTSB says Boeing has not been able to produce the paperwork that details that work. Here is what Hammondy says in her new update to the senators on the committee overseeing aviation. She says the absence of those records will complicate the NTSB's investigation going forward. She also underscored that Boeing has been unable to locate the security footage of that work. Boeing has responded, saying it supported the investigation from the start, and it will continue to do so, although another black eye for Boeing here as it struggles to rebound from what is an apparent quality control problem at the plane maker.
Yeah, I can understand why they might be reluctant to give up individual names of people because they don't want to deter perhaps whistleblowing or people raising concerns in the future. But why you wouldn't be documenting these things, I think, is just another red flag. Okay, let's leave that one there, and let's talk about the LATAM Airlines Flight 800 that, of course, had that drop or that technical event on Monday. They've now got the, I believe, the cockpit voice recorder, and they've got those black boxes. How long does it take to analyze those, Pete? What are we expecting?
Both the black boxes here, and this is something that is really key as this probe is now starting to hit its stride. Investigators in New Zealand have now recovered both of the black boxes from LATAM Airlines Flight 800. That's a Boeing 787, so another Boeing plane, experienced this mid-flight drop on Monday, powerful enough to injure 50 passengers. This is really key, this account from one passenger who tells CNN that one of the pilots on his way out of the plane told this passenger that the cockpit displays went dark, leading the pilots to briefly lose control. The flight data recorder here will be key, and it can show the airspeed, the altitude, the position of the controls, even the position of the switches. So that will really give a lot of unvarnished insight into exactly what took place here, because there are some pretty big questions about what precipitated this. The initial thought was that this could have been a severe turbulence issue, but now investigators, of course, will want to know if this was a problem with the flight controls, if this was a problem with the autopilot. It does take some time to get to the bottom of that data. It is a lot of raw data, and so in some cases, they ultimately need to send it here to the U.S. for it to be analyzed. We will see. They've only just gotten the flight data recorder and the cockpit voice recorder just today. And so now they really need to go through this and figure out exactly what went wrong, but there will be some key clues in it.
Pete, I need to tap into your enormous brain and understanding for these things. And you can tell me if you don't know, but would a black box be able to pick up a situation where, as the pilot suggested to one of the passengers, that everything went blank momentarily and that accounted for the drop and then things came back and the plane carried on? Would a black box pick that up in some way?
It can pick up a little bit about the systems in the airplane, right, and their continuity, exactly what is happening on the flight deck. That is where the cockpit voice recorder comes in, though, too, because that is able, with very sensitive microphones, to not only pick up the conversations between the pilots, but also the conversations on the radio, and then the ambient noise outside of the airplane, the ambient noise inside of the cockpit that they were able to hear as pilots. And so that can be really telling. And in some cases, they can do frequency analysis of that noise to hear exactly how fast the airplane is going and what some of the other conditions would be around this incident. You know, turbulence, clear air turbulence, can often come on with not much in the way of warning. It's not really even associated with any weather phenomenon. And so that will be something that the investigators will also want to see as well. What was the weather at the time of the incident? And if this was something that the pilots could have avoided, even if this was a turbulence incident, this may be accurate, that the pilot said that their screen simply went dark and they lost control of the airplane. That is a really, really big problem in an airplane that is so technically advanced like the 787. It's the flagship from Boeing.
It's great to get your insights into this because, as you said, the analytics on this really matter. But something even just as basic, perhaps, as a pilot saying everything's gone blank.
Right.
You know, now what type of thing is it could be picked up too. We shall see. Pete Muntean, thank you.
Anytime.
Okay, running on now to Adidas and that messy breakup with Kanye West and costing the company millions. Lower sales of the rapper's Yeezy line helped push Adidas to its first loss in three decades of $63 million last year. Adidas parted ways with the rapper in 2022, if you remember, over a series of anti-Semitic remarks, with more than $325 million in leftover Yeezy inventory. Anna Stewart has more.
Well, ending the Yeezy partnership hasn't been easy. Adidas cut ties with Ye, formerly known as Kanye West, back in 2022 after he made a string of anti-Semitic comments. Now, this was an expensive breakup. At one stage, a Morgan Stanley analyst estimated the Yeezy line contributed up to 40% of the company's profits. And the strategy on how to deal with it was pretty foggy. First, it suspended sales. Then there was a plan to sell the sneakers without the logo, before deciding it would sell the brand with the logo, with a significant amount of the proceeds going to organizations combating discrimination. And it made Adidas some money too. Yeezy managed to contribute more than $300 million to the company's operating profit last year, according to Wednesday's earnings report. Adidas also suffered from a huge tax bill last year and a sharp decline in sales in North America, which it expects to continue into this year. The Yeezy debacle didn't help those sales, but there is also a broader demand problem at play, with Nike facing similar issues. In fact, Nike recently announced it would be laying off around 2% of its workforce. Some good news in China, though. Sales increased 8% last year, and Adidas expects it to hit double-digit growth this year. East not quite making up for Kanye West, but Adidas hopes the Yeezy problem will soon be behind it. Anna Stewart, CNN, London.
Okay, more than 1 month's worth of snow expected in Denver, Colorado. Then there are tornadoes in Kansas and also wildfires possible in Texas. Central U.S. bracing itself for just about every type of weather threat you can imagine. Chad Myers joins us now. It's the worst of everything all at once. Chad, walk us through this.
All at once from the same storm, Julia. I mean, we have the wind on the one side, that's causing the fire threat. We have the severe weather on the east and the warmer side, that's causing the severe weather threat. And then the cold air, which is causing all the snow into Denver. Now, the wind threat for Texas will go away tonight, but there will be wind gusts of 50 miles per hour, 75 kph. Now, here we go. The rain for tomorrow off to the east along the severe weather we're having right now into parts of Kansas. But it snows all night tonight in Colorado, and that is going to cause on the east side of Denver 4 inches, I don't know, 8 centimeters. You're going to go to the west of Denver, and all of a sudden you're talking, I heard you say it, a meter of snow, 39 inches, 40 inches of snow in the mountains. Now, this is a place that people want to go play in it, and it's kind of the ski resort area, but that's a little bit too deep even for most skiers to ski in, I'm afraid. This is what we're going to see for the day today and into tonight. We probably have most of the roadways, especially west of Denver, I-25 West, will be closed tomorrow. Absolutely impossible travel. And then the potential for severe weather, tornadoes, St. Louis, all the way down to Little Rock, Arkansas. Yes, the threat is there tonight into parts of Kansas. Not as populated, though, as the area we're going to see tomorrow, with the potential for even a couple of strong tornadoes here. A little bit farther off now to the east into East Asia. Temperatures are really doing very well. A little bit of rain showers here for Shanghai for later on today, but this is a pretty good forecast for just about everyone here. The showers will move away from Tokyo, move away across parts of Northern Japan, and for temperatures here at even Osaka at 14, very pleasant. And I know people in America don't know what 14 means. When you're somewhere between 14, 10, 10, 20, somewhere in there, take the number, double it, and add 30. Now, it's not perfect. You're supposed to do 9/5 and 32, but just for your quick math. So if you see 10, double 10, that means 20, add 30, that's 50, close enough. So here's 22 Beijing, that's around 72 degrees Fahrenheit for Beijing for tomorrow. And even Tokyo, a very pleasant number of days in a row, getting ready for those blossoms to be all through the city. Julia.
I love the maths on that for a European, especially, and the numbers do get worse the higher you go or the lower you go, but we'll stick with it in the middle ground.
That's right.
Delivering the worst news in the best possible way. Thank you, Chad, as always. Chad Myers there. All right, coming up on First Move, sell it or face a ban. We'll discuss the battle over TikTok with US Republican Congressman Corey Mills right after this break. Stay with us. Welcome back to First Move and to the fight over TikTok. Here in the United States, nearly 60% of teens aged 13 to 17 use the social media app every day. That's according to data from the Pew Research Center. And a third of adults under 30 say they regularly get the platform for news. Now, House lawmakers passed a bill that could force TikTok's Chinese parent company to sell the app. But its fate is unclear as senators appear to be divided over the legislation. Joining us now, Republican Congressman Corey Mills. Congressman, great to have you on the show. You were one of the co-authors of this bill, so I will say congratulations for seeing it pass in the House. Far easier, perhaps, than getting it through the Senate. Can you do that in some form?
Well, we will see. I actually was co-sponsoring it, not co-authoring it. I think that it could have definitely had a little bit of a stronger language that was put in to make it a little bit more clear. But, you know, our biggest problem with this platform, and again, it doesn't ban TikTok. It bans foreign adversarial ownership of these types of platforms that has been utilized multiple times, not just to violate data privacy, but also helping the propaganda and misinformation campaign. And we saw this even more so weaponized yesterday as the platform would actually force every single account user to enter your zip code prior to being able to access. And then it would give the representative's number that would auto call. So they had to actually contact the representative and show that before they even access the application. So imagine how this could be manipulated on future legislation or in efforts to try and help the CCP ownership of these types of platforms. So our overarching goal here is just to protect the children and the users of these platforms, to stop this cold war that has been going on for a long time with China against the US, with the propaganda, misinformation, cyber-based, resource-based economic and supply chain warfare, and to try and ensure the privacy of all Americans are protected.
There are two things here. There's the protection of data, as you see it, and as you mentioned there, misinformation and disinformation. If we take that piece of this separately, do you think TikTok poses any greater threat to the fabric of society in the United States or anywhere else in use by foreign adversaries than any other platform that are US-owned, Facebook, YouTube, for example?
Well, I think this is a good step. The biggest thing about the U.S.-owned corporations is they fall under certain regulatory structuring. And I think that that's where TikTok, with its foreign ownership, kind of can circumvent some of these areas. But I don't agree with any social media platform, whether it be through Meta, whether it be Facebook or X or any of the others, having the right to violate privacy data or be utilized in a way to exploit children. And bear in mind that many of these platforms have seen it almost become a predatory prey mechanism for those who are trying to exploit and trying to entice children or those who are underage into different types of sexual activities and things like this. And so I think as a parent of a 9-year-old who utilizes YouTube and other things, we certainly try to monitor as much as possible. But the data privacy piece and the continual espionage through the platform is what's most concerning.
Yeah, I was going to say, to your point, and maybe before you said that, I was going to say, and yet Congress has been unable or unwilling to act on any other of those. What makes this different?
Well, I think that it's the root of who is trying to utilize this platform, being the CCP, being an actual spy and espionage data platform. You know, Mike Gallagher has done a great job as the chairman of the China Select Committee to try and look at ways of weakening adversarial nations such as the CCP leadership in China. And so this is one of the first steps. The other thing that we did in our tax bill was also to eliminate the double taxation on Taiwan to try and look at how that would prevent continual aggression for the takeover of Taiwan. I mean, we know that China doesn't adhere to certain treaties and they're continuing to violate IP data issues every single in the billions, by the way, by corporations here in the U.S. And so this is a step in the right direction. Again, I don't want perfect to be the root enemy of good, but this is a good bill that I think helps to try and send a direct message. And it certainly should send a message to the rest of the platforms that they should be cautious in what they're doing when it comes to spying on Americans and their data.
It also sends a message to plenty of voters that use this platform, too. I mean, the last time TikTok came under this scrutiny, the Chinese were adamant. They said they won't sell, that actually they'd rather see the business in the United States fold if necessary. If that comes, I guess, via a ban, then so be it. Is that a political risk
worth taking. There are plenty of small businesses that use this. There are plenty of young voters that are dead against losing access to this platform. What are your constituents saying about this? Because certainly support, it seems, in the United States for a ban, and I appreciate that's a long way down the line, is actually dissipating and has dissipated quite aggressively, even in the last 12 months.
Well, first off, this isn't the only platform that's available to people out there. And certainly it's one that's been the most abusive when it comes to data privacy and other things that we have found through the platform, which is classified.
But get over it. Voters will just get over it. If they lose it, they'll go somewhere else.
Well, again, this is really up to the CCP on whether or not they're willing to divest. But the reality is, this is very similar to what happened with Huawei. You remember when Huawei 5G was to be tried to be implemented, we found out that it was a tool that was being utilized for espionage, which even Canada and other nations have now figured this out. So did Macron over in France. And so they utilize these types of apps to continue to grab this data platform to utilize their espionage and also to use coercive messaging that tries to help with the propaganda and misinformation campaign. So it is up to them to divest. It is up to the individual users. But at the end of the day, our job, just like when it comes to the reauthorization of Section 702, which was being abused by the FBI, we as a body, myself, I actually voted against this reauthorization because, again, I believe in American privacy. I believe in everyone's independent right to their privacy. And I think that platforms like this and 702 and others have definitely violated that.
Some of them would say this is a violation of their freedom of speech, though, too. Can I ask about President Trump? Because initially,
it's not a First Amendment violation at all, actually. I mean, no one's telling you that you can't continue to utilize any free speech or platform. This is not even trying to ban TikTok. This is banning CCP, who we know is an adversarial body against America, from utilizing this to spy and pry on Americans.
But could end up in a ban, just to be clear. Can we talk about President Trump? Because he picked this fight initially with TikTok over national security concerns, as you quite rightly have pointed out now several times. Now he's done a U-turn and said he's not in favor of a ban. What is your message to him on this? Because if we do see a future President Trump, he could reverse any decision by Congress, or at least push for it, particularly if the Republicans are in control of House or Senate.
Well, look, I support the president. I endorsed the president early on. I look forward to his return to the White House to be able to try and take care of key issues. But one of the things that President Trump always done well was actually hold our adversaries accountable and help to build and strengthen our allies. Could there have been another type of an amendment that can come into this? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, I've got to listen to my constituency, who is ultimately who I respond to. And many of our constituents who we've spoken to when we talked about the banning of this Chinese platform was very much in favor of it. So I can't speak to other districts or other states or even for the president himself. I can only speak for my constituency who elected me to represent them.
Okay, you'll agree to disagree, I think, on this one. Congressman, you've been rescuing American citizens again. The last time we spoke, you were rescuing Americans in Israel after October the 7th. I believe you've been personally rescuing Americans that were caught up in the violence in Haiti. Can I ask what you saw there and how those individuals are doing, and why are you flying in there to help them?
Well, unfortunately, I wish it wasn't just having to be me. I wish that our administration and others would do more. But this has been a pattern of abandonment, if you will, dating back to 2021 during the botched Afghanistan withdrawal, where Congressman Ronnie Jackson had reached out to us from Texas 13 to rescue a mother and three children who are Amarillo, Texas natives who had been trapped. And we eventually, after the State Department and others trying to thwart our efforts, conducted the very first successful rescue out of Afghanistan. Fast forward to October of 2023, many nations had sent planes in to rescue people from Ben Gurion Airport in Israel. The only problem was America wasn't one of those. And so, again, I saw where there was a lot of Americans who were calling in panic, many who were sleeping in fallout and bomb shelters, and some who had lost their lives, unfortunately, are now even still hostages. And so I went in October 11th, only days after the barbaric attacks on October 7th, and was able to successfully rescue over 255 Americans. Now here we are again. The geopolitical failures, the failures in the failed state of Haiti, where people like Jimmy Barbecue Chavez, he was able to grow the G9 and family gangs to be able to be this violent cohort who's now the de facto leadership in many ways, with the prime minister resigning and most of the government being being in Puerto Rico. And so, again, Americans were at risk. Americans were begging the State Department for help. Mitch Albom and his group with Have Faith Orphanage had been asking the State Department, please come help us do something. And they said, we're in the midst of planning. What they didn't say is they were in the midst of planning their own evacuation. The people they were in contact with have now evacuated themselves out of the country and have left them behind. And so at that point, we do have to step up. And again, I do believe in my job and my duty to protect and secure Americans. I don't care who they vote for, what party affiliation, what their job is. I care about the fact that there are Americans who are in help, and I always want to come to the need of those who are in help.
Congressman, thank you for your time. Thank you for the work that you're doing and the rescues attempted and achieved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Congressman Corey Mills. We're back after this.
The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish. Celebrities of all kinds are speaking publicly about their therapeutic trips, so to speak. It turns out there is a burgeoning industry ready to serve the new influx of people who find themselves turning away from traditional mental health therapy. The gap between what we know and what we don't about psychedelic therapy. Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
The countdown is over and the celebration of freedom has arrived. It's My Freedom Day, a student-led day of action against modern-day slavery and bonded labor. Now, some of you might remember earlier this week, First Move explored the plight of marginalized workers in Nepal. The Harawa Chowara have been forced to work the land for landlords for generations, trapped by loans with extortionate interest rates, keeping them in debt. Now, the Nepali government officially freed them in 2022, but without financial relief. In a moment, we're going to talk to one of the organizations helping them. But first, here's one little girl who's celebrating her freedom today. Nick Reno is CEO of the Freedom Fund, an international organization working to end modern slavery. Nick, great to have you on the show with us. What we saw and what I've read and we saw, I think, earlier this week was that the government banned bonded labor, 20 years ago? And we saw the banning of the debts as well in 2022, but actually to leap to something new and to get a new business or a new alternative livelihood requires support, it requires financial access, and it requires education. And that's where you come in.
Absolutely, Julia. I mean, it was a momentous day about 18 months ago when the government declared that this group, Harawa Chowara, about 100,000 people in southeast Nepal who have been, you know, kind of in bondage and in a form of modern slavery for generations, were declared to be liberated. But there's a big, big difference between a declaration and real action. And so that's what we're focused on now, and Harawa Chowara leaders are focused on, is turning that declaration into real action for the Harawa Chowara and particularly for the children.
And how does that work? Because as I mentioned, and as you said, a lot of the work that you're doing, particularly with the forum, requires access to education, providing financing that's not at extortionate rates. How do you take someone that's worked for many years and that their ancestors have worked in a specific situation for many years and provide them with unique opportunities for change, particularly for young people?
Well, I think you have to understand that it's not up to us, right? It's the Harawa Chowara leaders that will drive change. And our role is to support them in their struggle and their movement. At slavery at its heart is this massive power differential of highly exploitative landlords and perpetrators of violence exploiting vulnerable populations who don't get the protection of the law. And so what we're trying to do is help them assert their rights. And so what's been so impressive with the Harawa Chowara is that over the last 8 years or so, the leaders have come together, the communities have come together, and they've decided on the course of action, and they've agitated and they've built a movement and they've lobbied the government. And what they've been able to do is get this declaration, and that's to them a starting point, because now they're determined to turn that declaration into action. And by action, they want these illegal loans that are highly oppressive loans cancelled. they want their children. I mean, when we speak to the leaders, I was out there in November and asked the Harachara leaders, you know, what are their priorities? Well, one of the top priorities is ensuring that their children go to school. For that to happen, the loans have to be cancelled. They have to have proper jobs. They often live in desperately vulnerable situation on land that is flooded. And so they need access to proper land, land rights. So all of that is a work in progress. But I'm confident with support and I'm confident with attention like that they'll get from this story, that they'll be able to get there, and we'll have, you know, this group of 100,000 people and some 10,000 kids who are currently forced to work in a situation of where they're living lives free of this kind of exploitation.
What do the workers themselves say, Nick? Are they optimistic that the work now up to this point and the declaration that you mentioned will actually achieve the degree of freedom that we're talking about and perhaps the ability to move on debt-free and to find other sources of income perhaps? And to your point as well, education for their children to definitely do something else perhaps in the future.
It's hard to say. I mean, you know, when you've been exploited for generations, you don't immediately just trust what you're told, right? And they've had to fight for their freedom. And so I think they're hopeful, but, you know, it's kind of trust but verify. And when I met with the leaders, they were just, you know, making very clear their determination. And a story you showed earlier, you saw some of the leaders and you saw their determination to fight for their rights. And that's what the Freedom Fund is doing, right? It's providing support and providing support to organizations that are working with them so that they can ensure that their voices are heard and that, you know, their very legitimate concerns are addressed and that they can live lives in freedom and free of exploitation and their children can grow up free of this kind of exploitation.
Yeah, I think you said it, trust. Trust has to be built to believe ultimately that change can come. What can people do to help, Nick, if they're watching this and feel moved to perhaps donate? How do they get involved?
Well, there's many ways for people to get involved. I mean, for a start, this particular story and drawing attention is absolutely critical. People, the Harachara themselves said they want a spotlight shine on this issue. The Freedom Fund is working with many local organizations. So any money that we raise goes to local partners. So, you know, we're a channel to fund organizations. And so if people want to support us, then there's a way that we can get that to organizations on the ground that are leading this fight and directly to the Harachara network. But it's the continued attention and focus on the issue that will make a difference.
Yeah, and we'll keep shedding light. Nick, great to chat to you. Thank you for all the work that you and the team are doing.
Yeah.
Nick Rono, the senior of the Freedom Fund. Thank you. Now, will you take a stand against forced child labour and join the movement? Post your message using the hashtag MyFreedomDay on social media and go to cnn.com/MyFreedomDay for more information. And CNN will have special coverage of My Freedom Day throughout the day. My colleague Chrissy Lou Stout will be at a school in Hong Kong in around 6 hours' time, speaking to children about what freedom means to them. Now, meanwhile, the global celebration continues. These children in Cape Town, South Africa, are using their hands to play, not to work. And they're posting their pictures on social media. Take a look. At the Oscars at the weekend, the award for Best Shout-Out goes to my next guest. IMAX CEO Rich Gelfond got a name check from a grateful Oppenheimer producer, Emma Thomas, as her movie scooped the Best Picture award. And there's more.
In the shadows of Arrakis lie many secrets.
Yes, this year's must-see film Dune Part 2 is kicking up a storm at the box office too. It's produced by Warner Brothers, which, just to mention, is owned by the parent of CNN. Shot entirely on IMAX digital cameras, IMAX captured 22% of the global box office in the second weekend of its release, and that's a record. All this fueling growth with 129 deals signed last year for new and upgraded IMAX systems. There is plenty to shout about, and Rich Gelfond joins us now. Rich, you never shout. Welcome to the show. It also follows a strong year for global box office receipts and local language films too. Talk us through it.
Yeah, we reported a few weeks ago, and it was tied with our best year ever in terms of gross box office receipts. And We had a triple the number of signings from the year before, more than double the number of installations. We really killed it in 2023, and that was despite a fourth quarter, which was disrupted by the strike. But I think what the most important thing was last year, and I love your best shout-out award. I just wish you'd give me a trophy for that. We didn't get that one. But what's been going on is increasingly filmmakers have been putting more and more IMAX DNA into films, which means shooting them with IMAX cameras, using the IMAX aspect ratio, releasing them globally in our 90 countries in IMAX film and IMAX digital. And our percentage of the box office has been going up. You mentioned local language content. About 20% of our box office is, for example, Japanese films in the UK, Indian films in the United States. So we've really had a lot of wind at our backs.
I saw that 60% of IMAX China's 2023 box office receipts were local language titles, to your point on that, which actually blew my mind. Can we talk about Taylor Swift? Everyone likes talking about Taylor Swift because you had the first ever IMAX concert, I believe, or film, concert film in mainland China at the back end of last year. And I've not had a chance to talk to you about it. It was a sort of curated experience. It wasn't live, but it felt live. Talk about that too, because it's sort of a nice way of challenging some of the battles that are now going on, particularly in Southeast Asia over where she goes live. You provide a great alternative.
Yeah, and you know, I'll get back to Taylor, but it's not just Taylor. We just re-released a Queen concert from 40 years ago. We cleaned it up using new technology. We remixed the sound, and I'm a big Queen fan, and I thought Freddie Mercury was right there in front of me. And we did Stop Making Sense, The Talking Heads. We have a lot more coming up this year. So I think because IMAX is so popular as an awe-inspiring experience, we felt we could open the aperture and not just do global blockbusters and not just do documentaries, but find other experiences where people could feel like they're inside the action. And Taylor Swift works really well on a worldwide basis overall, not just IMAX. It did over $200 million. But we played a role with AMC, who had put the deal together, in getting it into China. And you're quite right, the results were spectacular. We weren't so sure at the beginning because she doesn't quite have the following in China that she has in a lot of other places, but we were very pleasantly surprised. And we're actually starting to look at, can we take Chinese music talent who maybe is, you know, much more popular than Taylor Swift and release that in China? And as you know, after Taylor Swift, we did Beyonce, and that worked pretty well. So I think one of the things that came out of the pandemic and the strike is you don't want to be just tied to Hollywood content. You want to diversify, and you want to use that fantastic screen and that wonderful experience for a broader array of experiences.
Yeah, I mean, your local language results scream that, quite frankly. Quick question on China, by the way. I mean, a lot of the conversations we're having are about the economy, despite the performance that you're seeing and price pressures and deflation. Any sense of discussions, at least, or moves to perhaps reduce ticket prices there?
Well, during the Chinese New Year period, which just ended, prices came down a little bit. But the summer in China was the best summer they had ever had at the movies, which was very encouraging. And I think, you know, for the right kind of movies, the kind of movies we do, people are willing to pay a decent price. So last weekend, we released Dune 2 in China, and it was pretty much regular pricing. And we did 1/3 of the box office on 1% of the screens in IMAX. So I think whether it's local language or it's Hollywood films, if you have the right product, people will pay for it.
Oh, my goodness. That's the stat of the conversation. 1/3 of the box office receipts for 1% of the screens. Rich, I've run out of time. Congratulations on what we're seeing. And you're going to come back on soon and talk to me about what's coming up in 2024 and how Dune 2 progresses. Rich Gelfond there, the CEO of IMAX. Thank you.
Love to do it. Thank you so much.
That just about wraps up the show. Thank you for joining us. I'll see you tomorrow.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.